basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Bryant for the win. Bang! James puts up the three. Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. Goodbye. Tenths of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And it's the morning after the shocking news that the Lakers have been sold for the second time in 14 months. Got a lot more details coming out, and I think we're going to delve into a little bit more of who's Bob Iger, because part of the reporting boils down to Kushner is the money man and Iger is the guy who's actually going to be running the Lakers. We gave our initial reactions yesterday, and a lot of my concerns, and not even concerns, but just like dislike of it, actually doesn't have anything to do with basketball. And so we're going to get more into the how the Lakers are going to be run. We also got some reporting today, D, about I think Mark Walter needed to sell as quickly as he did. Initially, if you're not familiar with the investigation that's going on with him, the allegation is that he had used $1.4 billion, according to him initially, from his life insurance companies, and those had been transferred to other companies of him that he owns. Well, came out today that actually that's $21 billion that we've transferred for. Just a small $20 billion accounting error. I hate when that happens. So I think that probably explains some of the reason why this needed to happen as quickly as it did. But of all of the reporting, and just as we found out more about all of this, D, where does your mind first go to?
It's two-pronged, the way that you said, is I'm trying to learn as much as I can about Bob Iger. You know, Bob Iger went on the record yesterday with Kobe Price. So shout out to Kobe. And he got some quotes from Iger and some of the reporting that do imply this is something that Iger's clearly been trying to do for a while in terms of getting an NBA franchise, that they were in on making the pitch to be the expansion for Las Vegas, to trying to get a franchise in Las Vegas. And some of the reporting that Ramona Shelburne did around this was, it's so competitive, the Vegas market, and trying to get this expansion team, that the fee was just going up and up and up. And reportedly now that what they're essentially going to pay for Mark Walter's shares of the Lakers, that the expansion fee was going to be close to that. And so the way that Ramona was framing this was, you can pay all that same amount of money or close to it to get an expansion team with no history, with no background, and then work with Las Vegas or go out privately and build an arena and do all of that in order to house a team in Las Vegas. Or you could potentially pivot and try to buy the Los Angeles Lakers. And that's what he did. And so the two-pronged or split mind that I have is trying to learn as much about Iger, his history as a leader and running organizations, his background with the NBA and his history there, and learning as much as I can about him in order to try to forecast what his leadership of the Lakers might look like. And the other side of this is real intrigue around what's going on with Mark Walter and the need or the desire or his decision to essentially treat the Lakers like the biggest real estate flip you've ever seen in your life in terms of the money that he's made. And the funny thing is that I don't think this was his plan at all, Pete. And it feels like the reporting around this that he's found himself in a situation, seemingly, again, he's under investigation. Nothing has been proven yet. And there's just a lot of reporting out there pointing in a single direction. And so I don't want to make it out to be that I'm an investigative reporter or that I know the news or that I know anything.
I don't either, D, but I also don't like the passive voice. Like, he's found himself to sort of like be $20 billion of worth of, I'm not sure what happened to the, you know what I'm saying? Like, for, again, this, and this even goes back to yesterday's pod of like how powerful people move and like the way that they're treated with kid gloves versus the dude who's selling a dime bag and is doing a jail. I don't know. Fuck these people, man.
My point is, though, the point I was getting to is that these dots don't seem very difficult to connect. This doesn't seem like this elaborate pathway of me having to turn left, take four steps, turn right, go straight, do all. No, bro, I'm opening one door and on the other side of the door, there's the answer is what
that's
it seems
what
like
I'm saying
to
too.
Me.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. For all the caveats that we can put out. And the last part that I said is about the only caveat that I'm going to use the entire pod is that what it looks like to me is that Walter had planned for the Lakers to be a long-term investment for him in the same way that the Dodgers have been a long-term investment for him. And he had laid out, Pete, all of these plans. We talked about it yesterday. One of them being turning the Lakers practice facility, at least part of it, into this huge sort of medical and wellness facility that was going to be available and open to Lakers and Dodgers personnel and players. And so you don't do the sort of like overhaul within the front office and start to hire people and bring people in from the Dodgers specifically to both advise. And then with Lon Rosen, someone who is actually named with a press announcement and a release to a high level position within the organization while holding a very similar position with the Dodgers, right? And so it's clear they were putting things in place for this to be the sister organization to the Dodgers and for them to run in tandem, in parallel, in seeking out to be like this dynastic duo of crown jewel teams within the city of Los Angeles that he was going to run in perpetuity. So I don't believe for a second that 14 months later, you sell it because you're going to make $2.5 billion. I think you sell it precisely because that $2.5 billion seemingly that you're making, and it's actually more complicated than that. We're using that number just because that's the difference in valuation between what he paid 14 months ago and what he's selling it for now. But the idea of like, no, I need this money. And I need it for other reasons, for ways that are impacting my life. And so my mind is sort of split between these two tracks, Pete, of, well, clearly this Walter stuff is serious and requires a certain amount of immediate action from him. And on the other end of this, I'm very forward thinking about the Lakers and what we don't know about Iger and how his history as a business person and executive can translate to sports team ownership. And that's the thing that I wanted to kick to you, is that we were very excited about the Walter acquisition because, at least for me, there was tangible evidence that he knew what he was doing in this realm already, to say nothing of the fact that he was already a minority owner of the team. So it was a very clean understanding that, no, we're getting someone who's familiar with the Lakers and is also familiar with building up a championship level organization. And that should track and get you excited within the context of being a Lakers fan. Iger has all of this success, Pete, but in this other avenue of business, and I don't know how that's going to translate. And I'm very interested in having that conversation as well and starting to sort of speculate about what it might look like, because that was the part of the conversation that Iger had with Kobe Price that he didn't say much of at all. In fact, he was actively saying it would be wrong for us to speculate as to what things might look like going forward because this came together so fast. And it's not like we were planning for this thing to happen the way that it did right in this moment. So let's take a break here, Pete. And when we come back, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
So one of my best friends is a huge Bob Iger stan and has been for years. And he was the first person I thought of when I heard of this sale. And so I asked him, you know, what is your take on all of this? And give me the pro Bob Iger point of view. And he was generous enough to give me sort of both reasons for optimism and reasons for concern. And one of his main points, and he, again, at the end of it, nets out at being very pro-Iger, is that the foundation of a lot of his success with Disney was he put the fan experience really number one. That was like the main thing that stood out from what he told me about. And again, this is somebody who's just like, who really knows Iger inside and out. He's somebody he really looks up to. And with Disney, he was somebody that was beloved by creators, by the fans, and really look to put the fans first in a lot of ways and how they viewed things. And that's encouraging, right? You hope for that in your team owner, because the Lord knows there's a lot of owners who don't do that and who don't operate in that manner. So he had two tenures with Disney. One was much longer than the second. And he was, I mean, probably the most successful CEO in Hollywood at the time. He took Disney from being in a pretty rough place to just a series of blockbuster movies. They acquired Marvel, they acquired Pixar, a few other things that really worked out. And
yeah, Lucasfilms as well, like Wars acquisition was like a big acquisition for them as well, yes.
And so he's viewed as, from the fans to the creators to the stakeholders, as somebody that was beloved by all, which is extremely difficult to do. And then he stepped away for a few years, and Disney, I forget the name of the CEO that replaced him, but it didn't go particularly well. And then he came back and it wasn't as successful. He kind of went out with a bit more of a whimper. Now, I think that owning a media company in the 2020s is just an entirely different challenge than ever before. I think that, like, you know, between streaming and AI and all of them have been sort of guessing on people's consumption habits and things like that. And I don't think that from whether it's newspapers or television stations, we were talking about like regional sports networks recently, all of them are really, really struggling. So I don't, it's not a matter of me like, oh, well, he wasn't successful in his second term, or at least not nearly as successful, and therefore, you know, therefore he's washed. That said, one belief I do have in general that is on more of the negative side is I generally don't think 75 and 80 year olds should be running things, even the most competent in that. I think that's when you start to become most detached. And even more importantly, people of that age do not have much skin in the game in terms of what the long-term effects are of what their decisions are. And so this is something I believe from business to politics, that at some point you got to move on. And it, like, we got to have stop having so many 75 and 80-year-olds running things. And that's part of my concern, right? And so this is sort of a last shot to make his mark, I think, in a totally different arena than he ever has before. And I hope he approaches it with the enthusiasm that he has with other things. One thing, you know, he's a longtime season ticket holder of the Clippers. Said on JJ Redick's pod long ago that he was a Clipper fan. Although his rationale after hearing him, I was like, I don't know, I respect it. He's an old school New Yorker. This is where my family's from, my dad's side of the family. And right, he was talking about like the Lakers were just too big of a rival. And it's so foreign to us in 2026. But Bob Iger was 20 years old, basically, in 1972 or whenever it was when they won their title. So I do have a respect for like, nah, I just can't do it. But he gave some thoughts on, you know, buying the team to Kobe yesterday, like you said, and about having such an iconic franchise. But it sort of irks me slightly, right? Like, we got a Clipper, longtime Clipper fan who's like, nah, not the Lakers running the thing now. So I know you've done some research on Iger. I'm curious on your thoughts of what I've said and then just other details that you can add.
It's funny that last point, because when I heard that reporting around his being a season ticket holder for the Clippers, his relationship with Chris Paul. Apparently, he's a mentor to Chris Paul, which is a name that I want to talk about a little bit later when we talk about the direction of the team. One of the first comparisons I made, a guy who has allegiances or connections to a rival, quote unquote, to the Lakers, was when the Lakers brought in Bill Sharman in to run the Lakers during the 1970s and Bill Sharman famously was a Celtic, essentially, right? And Sharman came to the Lakers and brought with him a certain success that it's just like, sometimes if you're good, then just be good for us, right? So it made me chuckle a little bit that if he could be the new Bill Sharman for the Lakers from an ownership position rather than from a general manager role, then I'm all for it. I don't care who you rooted for. Funny though, I was listening to the Hoop Collective pod this morning, and Windhorst had on Ramona Shelburne as a guest. And Ramona has actually had quite the run this summer.
She's had an awesome summer, man. And I'm not, you know, the president of her fan club, but she, between the players that we were looking to acquire and then breaking this, she's done a hell of a job.
Well, also, too, she was one of the first people who was framing the Lakers' relationship with LeBron more through the Lakers' lens rather than only through the LeBron lens. And so when you add that to, just like you said, her talking about players like Quentin Grimes and Mamu very early in the process, and then her breaking this story about the sale, she is on quite the run of Lakers news being accurate and being at the forefront of that in terms of breaking news. So Ramona was on the pod. Windhorst was telling a story about how he saw Iger at game one of the finals, San Antonio versus the Knicks. And Iger was basically sharing, you know, I still have season tickets for the Knicks. I've had season tickets at the Knicks forever. I know that I live on the West Coast now, and I also have season tickets for the Clippers. But he's just like, I'm an OG Knicks fan. It's so great to see them in the finals. And so to your point, those ties last forever, and the team of your childhood will forever be your team. You know what I mean? And so whatever you have to do to sort of rationalize what your new fandom might be as you find yourself in a new city, it's just like, okay, this is what we're doing, I guess.
And the broader point is that he's been somebody who's loved the NBA for a very long time and has had influence in it. He was a big part of the bubble coming together. And I know that you found some information on the machinations of that, but he's been a power player in this world for a long time.
Well, just how long has ESPN and ABC been a league partner with the NBA, Pete? And it's basically been the entirety of Iger's tenure at Disney. And before that, Iger was with ABC. And so all of this portends a relationship with the NBA, him being at the negotiating table with Adam Silver and the NBA related to NBA rights for a long time. And then when you think about the time that he's surely put into putting a bid together for an expansion franchise, that's not something that happens in a 3-month time period. He's likely been working on this for what, a year, 2 years, forecasting out when the expansion might come and lining up the financing to be available in order to say we have the money to do this. So he clearly has extensive relationships in and throughout the NBA, solely from the standpoint of he's negotiated TV deals with the league forever, and he's been trying to get an NBA team seemingly for a while. And I agree with you in terms of, like, man, would be great to get a 55-year-old Bob Iger rather than a 75-year-old Bob Iger to sort of have the foresight and vision to play this out over potentially like a decade or more. But I would also say that his experience and the relationships that he's built hopefully do mean something in being able to build something out successful for the Lakers. Let's take our second break here, Pete. And when we come back, I do want to start to forecast a little bit because we don't have a lot to work on, but I do want to start to speculate a little bit. So, Pete, I want to kick a question to you, and I want to use the same sort of idea that we had when this happened 14 months ago and we had this same talk, but do it with Iger. Like I said earlier, we had a fair amount of information about what we thought a Walter-led group was going to do in terms of investment in the Lakers and taking money and putting it into the team in very specific ways, what they might value from an organizational standpoint. From what you've learned about Iger and sort of know about him and talking to people, how do you think this translates to a stewardship of the Lakers as a brand, as an organization, as a product on the court?
I think the Rolodex of people that he has relationships with, from everything I've found out in the last 24 hours, is just much more extensive than anything that we've had really over the course of our lifetime in terms of the, like, he's really a people person, somebody who has a lot of relationships, like you said, around the league, that even something along the lines of, like, Stephen A. Smith was talking about, Lakers couldn't have done any better than getting Bob Iger in there. Like, I would not be surprised at all if we get a slightly more beneficial whistle from ESPN this year on coverage of the Lakers just because of how people feel about Bob Iger, right? And that's one of my frustrations with the Lakers in terms of their relationship with the media. And I said this all the time when I worked with the team to them, of like, fight back, damn it, fight back. Like, if they're going to be shitting on us over and over and over again, that actually degrades the value of the brand. It can't be something that you just ignore. And what I wanted is somebody with some real juice to be able to see one of those segments and pick up the phone and talk to the bosses of those people and be like, dude, what the fuck? You know? And it doesn't have to be as confrontational as I can be, but can't, like, if you get a phone call from Bob Iger and you work at ESPN, even though he's not with Disney anymore or anything like that, you don't think he's got, like, tons of relationships there with people there that I can speak a little bit less from that angle of things, but even just something as peripheral as the media coverage of the team, I do think that having that level of influence and how he leverages that could be very beneficial.
I agree with that. And to your point, the sort of like stop playing defense so much from a media perspective and don't be in a crouch, that's something that we've talked about on the pod a ton over the years. And honestly, your thoughts on that have really influenced my viewpoint on sort of picking things out and recognizing like where it was happening more and more and understanding that I wasn't recognizing it before in that specific way, but sort of seeing it that way, I was just like, oh man, like these dudes got to stop being in a crouch. Stop acting like your radio silence is strength. In a lot of ways, it's not. And even if you think you're taking the high road by being silent,
they do.
The high road matters to get to some Sun Tzu shit on the Art of War. The high road is beneficial because you're above and you've got vantage and you can build advantage from the high road. If you're just going to camp out on the high road and not leverage it, then what are you doing? Bro, you're not going to do anything. At least put some positive stories out there about how these dudes are jerks and leak some shit the other way while taking the high road. I don't know. Anyways, I digress. I want to use this Rolodex idea in a different direction, Pete. Like, one of the things I always valued about Dr. Buss was his partnership with the league. And he understood the strength of the league was the strength of my team. And that a rising tide lifts all boats. It's one of the reasons why he never complained about revenue sharing. And I never heard Jeannie Buss once complain about revenue sharing. I never heard her once complain about their position within the league in that way.
And if I could add just one little tidbit, the first year of the in-season tournament, one of the very few times that we got edicts from upon high, it was then, because it was like, this was really important to the league. And because it's really important to the league, we as the Lakers are going all the way on this. Five-star coverage, going the extra mile to make it the best, and including all the way down to the floor where they ended up winning the thing. Yeah. But it speaks to that mentality that you're talking about of like, no, we're part of something bigger, and that rising tide does lift all boats.
So in fast-forwarding now to Iger, his longstanding understanding and relationship to the league, I think, can be leveraged in positive ways where I think that's a mentality that he can carry forward. I also think that his relationships across the league can be meaningful. And I also think that his ability to potentially leverage his Rolodex in ways where he can make smart hires and potentially outreach into different parts of the league in order to bring the right people on board or get counsel from some other smart people within the league, that those are ways that his relationships can also impact the Lakers in the long run and in the bigger picture.
If I'm listening to this, though, it's a little bit esoteric, right? His Rolodex and all better media coverage. If I'm a fan, I want to know, how is this going to impact the team that we end up seeing on the court? How do you see that idea of having a Rolodex and influence and relationships with a whole bunch of different people? How does that end up landing on the court for the Lakers?
Well, I think that smart people and trusting in smart people and allowing smart people to do their jobs is a critical part of leadership. And one of the things that I think Iger got dinged on in his second run with Disney is sort of the question of how much he undermined his ultimate successor in Bob Chapek, and how the sort of sloppy transition that happened where his previous successor, and I can't remember this person's name, who was hand-chosen by Iger, sort of didn't pass the smell test. I don't have all of the details, but ultimately his original hand-picked successor ultimately didn't get approved by the board of directors, and they had to pivot to Chapek. And then that didn't go well, and Chapek ended up being a very poor executive, and that ended up prompting the necessity for Iger to return, or the ask for him to come back from an advisor role, which he maintained, to actually doing the job again. And so the idea of, can he actually pick a successor well? I understand that some of the large choices that he made ended up being very beneficial to the company. And as you cited, he was very much known as a people person who put fans first. But the ability to sort of say, no, I trust your acumen in this, and I'm going to allow you to do your job, that's something I want to learn more on about him. That said, you mentioned that he was on J.J. Redick's podcast and he was a Clippers fan slash season ticket holder for a long time. If there's one person I would imagine is sort of safe within this, it might be J.J. Redick.
I think
within
so too.
That. And so when you talk about how a Rolodex can impact what happens on the court, is do you have a good relationship from you to your general manager to the head coach that's on the court, right? Like, who's your chief basketball decision maker? What does the outlining of that organizational structure look like? And are you in support of that? And then how does that translate to the court? It seems like there would be a good line between the head coach and the new owner. And I'm wondering about that middleman position that's currently occupied by Rob Pelinka. You said yesterday on our pod, and I heard you talking some on the Lakers Collective about this as well, that you believed that Rob Pelinka was very well positioned within the context of Mark Walter, and that whatever people might have thought about how it could have gone a year from now or 2 years from now, that was likely incorrect based off of the fact that Pelinka likely had good standing with Mark Walter. Pelinka's now is going to have to do this again with Bob Iger, right? And I'll be interested to see how that relationship goes. And I don't know if he's any more or less safe under...
Neither do I. Yes.
Iger than he would have been under Walter. But it is a new regime that he's going to have to ingratiate himself to. We know that Pelinka is typically good at that. So I wouldn't...
I wouldn't speculate
in either way with
He's outlasted a lot of people over the last few years. So yeah, don't underestimate his ability to stick around for sure.
But the through line, Pete, from ownership to head of basketball operations to the head coach and what's happening on the floor is critical. The Lakers just built out a long-term roster, Pete. They made three long-term signings of four-year deals this offseason, and then they signed Colin Sexton to a two-year deal, but the second year is a player option. And I'm sorry, they also brought back Austin Reeves, so the four long-term signings, right? And so this is a group that was built to be together for at least a couple of seasons and maybe more. And all of this should create a certain amount of stability within the on-court product, at least from the players. I'm very interested to see what the continued investment is going to look like in analytics, in player health and wellness, because I had a pretty good sense that that was going to be extensive under a Mark Walter organization. And we don't know enough about Iger or Kushner even within this aspect to see what the investment in that is going to look like.
And that's really the point I want to end on, is that we know so much less, I think, than we did even in the early days of the Mark Walter era of what we thought things would look like going forward. And I thought they were on track to mostly kind of align with what our expectations were early on, for just the era was so short, it never really got to develop and play out. And so them being somewhat of a blank slate, very easy to project both our optimisms and our pessimisms onto what that can be. But I think where we should be is mostly in fact-finding mode right now. And at the very least, we can learn who they are, what they believe in, how they've approached other organizations. And I think that provides some clues.
And just to echo that last point, Pete, the other connection that I would make is that Iger overtook a legacy organization in Disney and obviously saw the value of what it would mean to elevate and build on that legacy. And this is the thing that I think matters when you're talking about the Lakers being sold. And I think Mark Walter understood that from a perspective of, he already owned the Dodgers, he was already a part owner of the Lakers, and now he was going to become the full-on owner of the Lakers. I think Iger, being an LA industry person who ran Disney, is also going to carry forward a certain idea of, I know what it means to own the Los Angeles Lakers. And you have to start from that perspective. And that's the through line from Dr. Buss to Jeannie Buss to Mark Walter. And now I think to Bob Iger, which I think is important. You need that mentality. You need that through line to exist if you're going to succeed in this specific job. Now, we'll see what happens, but I think that that's the first part of it all that needs to happen.
Really well said, man. All right, we will wrap up here. Come back tomorrow. May continue talking about this, may pivot in a more on-court direction. We will see. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn, he's double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance,
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five.
Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.